Hip-hop was once the unique expression of urban black culture. In the last few decades, it's gone mainstream, though for many young African Americans, the music is still a powerful source of cultural pride. Thomas Chatterton Williams grew up listening to hip-hop. His scholarly father also instilled in him a passion for reading books. But it wasn't until he went off to college that hip-hop began to lose its appeal. Williams tells the story in his book, Losing My Cool.
What appealed to me about it mostly was the sense of identity that it gives you. The same way that, you know, being good at sports, when you're black, it makes you feel like here's something that is for you and that is kind of your birthright. When you're growing up black in this country, unfortunately, still going to Harvard, writing a novel, studying philosophy, painting beautifully, those are not things that are considered by whites or blacks to be your birthright.
And it's important to you to be black. I mean, your mother is white, your father is black, but you're very clear that your family always said, that doesn't matter. You are black and you need to understand that you're black.
That's right. And that's because my parents believed, and I still believe this is true, even though things have changed a lot from the early 80s when I was born. But my parents essentially believed that there's no such thing as being half white or having half of a privilege. You're either white or you're not. And so I clearly wasn't. Though I am I have mixed race heritage. I'm a black man like any other, like W.E.B. Du Bois, Frederick Douglass, Malcolm X clearly had a lot of things going on in his DNA. It's kind of always been part of the black American experience to not be completely genetically from Africa, but you're part of a black culture, and you're basically accepted that way by other blacks.
So how does hip-hop culture deal with that? Does it care?
I think that hip-hop culture does care about being black, but not about the purity of your blood. I think it cares about the way you conduct yourself. And so if you keep it real, if you're authentically black, it's a way of behaving. If you even look at some white rappers, there are white rappers who are accepted essentially as real because they buy into a way of acting and behaving that fits in with what is considered black.
Saw the pounds, just crush him and beat him to the ground. I just sold 2 million records, I don't need to go to jail. I'm not about to lose my freedom over no female. I need to slow down, try to get my feet on solid ground. So for now...
I actually grew up in a different way than most of my peers did. In my house, I had to study. My father, black man, born in 1937 in the segregated South, insisted that I study and do well in intellectual endeavors. And outside, in the basketball courts where I spent most of my time and at school, the black world that I kind of moved through and felt comfortable in demanded very different things than that, and also implicitly demanded that I hide those bookish aspects of myself, the more intellectually curious aspects of myself.
Yeah, you grew up reading the autobiography of Malcolm X at the age of 7, and as an older youth, reading Shirley Jackson's The Lottery and discussing how real that was. But it also gave you a kind of literary sense to take to the music, I would think. And hip-hop is nothing if not pretty descriptive.
Oh, I agree. And, you know, I don't criticize hip-hop from an artistic perspective because, as you say, it is descriptive. There's a lot of artistry to it. But sometimes if you take a look inside of what is actually the content, what's the message, what are the ideas that inform the art and the music, it's quite astounding sometimes what is being described so eloquently.
Do you remember some of the things you were listening to, who you were listening to?
Oh, absolutely. I was born in 81, so I guess the earliest that I was really paying attention to it was 89, 90. So that's when the West Coast was really starting to influence the music, and the kind of the subject matter was becoming darker because L.A. had a lot of gang culture and prison culture that was coming into the music.
If cocking all the riches, got the hollow points for the snitches, so won't you just walk on by, because I'm too hard to lift. And no, this ain't Aerosmith, it's the money over D.R.E. from the CPT on a robbing spree, a straight G.
Dr. Dre's The Chronic was a very big album in the early 90s that kind of influenced me because on the one hand, the music was extremely mellifluous and seductive. On the other hand, it was kind of astounding to me because it was so explicitly violent and misogynist. And I kind of bought into these ideas about women and about how to respond to, you know, perceived slights and disrespect.
So during the day, you'd behave in ways that if you had done that at home would have been well, frowned upon?
I always had a sense that there was something about it that was not quite okay. But my father understood intuitively that I was under a certain degree of pressure, and my brother was too, to fit in. And he kind of regretted that we were in a cultural environment in the first place where we would have to fit in to these things that he considered not so great. But we did have to fit in, and so he didn't. He wielded a light hand. If we were doing things well in school, if we were behaving properly, if we weren't getting into trouble, he wasn't going to give us too much grief about what we were listening to and how we were dressing. It was kind of a tacit agreement we had.
It's a relationship that clearly must have made you feel secure, even when you were listening to music that suggested you wanted to be somebody different from who he was.
I felt secure, and I felt that very privileged to have the father that I did. But when I thought of being black, I thought of my father as somewhat of an anomaly. He certainly was not someone who struck me as a sellout, but he struck me as perhaps eccentric, because I just found him to be exceptional and didn't think that that was necessarily a way for me to be black. The older I've gotten, I realize that the black experience is much more varied and multifaceted than I realized in my small part of New Jersey growing up. But growing up, I felt that to be black, I had to look more like what was outside of my house than what was inside of my house, because the kids that I was around, they really didn't seem to be too interested in various ideas about blackness.
Well, you talk about being out on the playground, and I've forgotten the name of the other kid, Rashawn. Who
Oh, was, older kid, yeah.
Yeah, who was a great basketball player, and you really admired him.
Well, that's true. I mean, the center of my life growing up was basketball, really. And this guy, he was kind of, when he would come around, he was always the best on the court. And he was extremely nice to me. He basically looked like everything that I had ever seen on BET and hoped to grow into. He had tons of sneakers. He was well-dressed. He was cool. And he was tough. Nobody wanted to disrespect him, which looks powerful to you when you're a child. And I was about 10 years old, and I remember he got in a dispute on the basketball court with a white kid who was much bigger than him. And he just really, in about 20 seconds, he knocked the kid unconscious. And I remember being kind of horrified about it, but also kind of proud of him, because I had experienced by that point a few instances of racism. And I thought, there's a kind of power that Rashawn has that I wish I had.
And some of that is reinforced by the music, too, isn't it? The music that is so clear about how you establish who you are and how tough you have to be.
I mean, it's at the level now as an adult. I can tell it's a lot of these guys are acting, but there is reality to it. I mean, people are valuing toughness and physical prowess over the development of their minds and spirits. And you know, and knocking somebody out over, you know, a minor argument, I think that's... That's quite frankly ridiculous. And, you know, if you listen to the music nowadays, it's so hyper-violent, it's unbelievable. Actors and minstrels like Rick Ross or Young Jeezy, it's this kind of casual reinforcement of it being okay and cool that I think does actually have an effect on young people growing up. Hit the kitchen lights, nice marble floors everywhere. Call the carpenter, the roof on the coop's gone. Give up what he sold on the truth, homes. Kitchen fumed up, jamming Tupac. Get my Benny Honda zone, working two pots. Baby need shoes, partner need bail money. Bloodhound for the bread, I just smell money. Just right, I recollect. Hands on Jesus, really counted them checks. I'm Donald Trump in a white tee and white ones. The conversation is money, you won't say. And it cares so much. You talked also about being in school, and most of the kids you were with wouldn't know when Martin Luther King's Day was, but they would know when... When Biggie Smalls was assassinated. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think that's... It's unbelievable. You know, first of all, that we consider that to be an assassination. And second of all, it's unbelievable that that's a realer date in our minds than, you know, things that really mattered and actually had historical impact.
We come back to your father and basketball. He came to a basketball camp where you were performing. You were scared. You were nervous. But what he said to you seems to me a sort of example of the two halves of your life, that your world doesn't need another entertainer or an athlete.
Oh, yeah. When he first said that to me, I was surprised. Why not? You know, my idea of pure success would be to, you know, play in the NBA. And it didn't make sense to me then. You know, why wouldn't he want another black entertainer. That's great. Everybody wants to be an entertainer or an athlete. But I thought about it, and he would say it to me over and over and over again. And I think it was really in college when it started to really hit me as some of the best advice I think a black father can give a black son, even if that son, or, you know, a black daughter too, even if that child does grow up to be the next Beyonce or the next Kobe Bryant, that's fine, but that shouldn't be the sole emphasis. You know, it's fine if it happens, but it's equally fine if they become a scholar or, you know, or just a decent civilian.
So when did these worlds begin to really collide, to conflict?
The worlds really started to collide when college was approaching. I think that during my freshman year, I looked at myself and I started to seem ridiculous to myself. I felt I was living in a kind of a bad faith. I was trying to be something that I wasn't and oughtn't be.
In the book, you talk about being in the car one day and listening to, almost nostalgically, to songs you liked. You remembered liking mm-hmm. so much that you'd play them over and over again. And then feeling as though you really didn't want to be a part of that, but you couldn't talk about it to anybody, and nobody else would understand.
Right. Well, you know, there are kind of these things you're not allowed to say. You're not allowed to criticize a person like Jay-Z because, you know, a lot of people are proud of the huge success he is in certain ways. He's a huge financial success. He's really a big name. He makes good music. So you're not allowed to criticize the fact that he, you know, essentially endorses selling drugs and makes that seem cool to a population that is disproportionately hurt and affected by the drug trade.
We do dirt like worms, produce G's like sperm, to legs spread like germs. I got extensive holes with expensive clothes, and I sip fine wines and spit Ventus flows, but y'all don't know.
I had just come back from France with the kind of the fervor and zeal of a convert. I had just only started to know anything about wine. And I said, I bet Jay-Z couldn't possibly know about fine wines or, you know, really understand the subtleties of viticulture. And my friend got, you know, it was a stupid joke, insult, but my friend got offended as though I had talked about his uncle or something like that, you know, and said, why couldn't Jay-Z? Well, you have to go to Georgetown to be able to do those things or to know that. And it was the first time I realized you're not allowed to poke fun at or to criticize seriously, you know, these things that we're supposed to revere.
There's something in the culture that you buy into and you have to buy out of at some point.
There's a mistaken idea that you're leaving your blackness behind if you criticize even guys like Gucci Mane or Rick Ross. There's a kind of idea that you can't completely leave that part behind because otherwise you're selling out somehow. So even President Obama says he listens to Jay-Z and Lil Wayne on his iPod. I recently wrote a piece criticizing that, and I've never written something that seemed to make so many people so angry.
Can you imagine your father ever listening to hip-hop?
I can't. You know, he's just, I think, too old to be influenced by the music. Doesn't sound like what music to people in that age range expect music to sound like. And the idea is, I mean, he would tell you that there's always been an element of kind of some of the stuff I'm criticizing in black culture and in American culture at large. But what he would say is so much worse now is it's what I'm saying, too, that this has narrowed to the point where it's not just a way of being, it's the way of being. It's the way of expressing your blackness. Black street culture has overtaken the whole category of black culture.
Of course, I can imagine that you might, if you're far away from your family, sit down in a room and hear somebody playing a little Coltrane, and it would bring your dad into the room, too.
Oh, yeah. Whenever I go home, now my mother knows that I'm very into jazz for the past few years, so whenever I go home, my mother will actually put on this collection of Coltrane that she has, and my father and I might be playing chess, and that's really the music that's on in the house now in my adult life.
Thomas Chatterton Williams is a writer. His book is called Losing My Cool: How a Father's Love and 15,000 Books Beat Hip-Hop Culture.